are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name's Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Monday, everybody. Somewhat mercifully, there's only one game left on the Timberwolves 2019 calendar year schedule. Of course, we're going to preview tonight's, that's Monday night's tilt between the Nets and the Timberwolves at Target Center in a few moments. First over, we do have to talk a little bit about the Wolves' hideous loss on Saturday night to the Cleveland Cavaliers, also at Target Center, as the Wolves continue to really struggle at home and also, of course, now have lost 12 of their last 13 games. So we'll talk a little bit about the game against the Cavs, and we'll get into the game on Monday against the Nets, take a peek ahead at the week ahead and see what's on tap for the Wolves. So the Wolves entered Saturday night's game confident that Karl-Anthony Towns would be missing his sixth consecutive contest due to his sprained left knee, and he did. He was not available for the game. The Cavs were already going to be without Jordan Clarkson, of course, who had been traded to Utah earlier in the week. It would have been their third game without him. And then it came down during the day on Saturday that Kevin Love would not be playing due to a hip contusion or apparently more load management than anything else after he played heavy minutes in Friday night's loss at Boston, had 30.7 rebounds. And the Cavs put up a fight but lost and played just 24 hours later in Minneapolis. But, you know, headed into the game Saturday, everybody knew there would be no Kevin Love. There'd be no, obviously, Jordan Clarkson. Those were the two best players for the Cavs for the whole first part of the season. And the Wolves without Towns, you know, still should have a good shot to run away with this one with Andrew Wiggins leading the way. The Cavs on a back-to-back, the Wolves coming off a win Thursday. But just a little bit before the game, it came down that Andrew Wiggins had flu-like symptoms, was questionable, and Brian Saunders said in pregame media availability that he was trying to make it to the arena. As it turns out, he never made it, and the Wolves were officially in a tough spot with no Andrew Wiggins. But, of course, still should have had a real chance to win against a poor Cleveland Cavaliers team, who, of course, is like the third worst team in the league record-wise and had been just 3-12 on the road to that point, as we covered extensively in our Friday, or our, I guess our Saturday morning edition of the Locked On Wolves podcast. However, things were not to be for the Wolves. They were outscored 27-21 in the first quarter, only scoring 21 points against a bad defensive team in the Cavs, and things were pretty much downhill from there. The game was closely played, you know, in the middle stages, but I mean, the Wolves ended up with 88 total points, so that tells you a lot about what this Wiggins and Townsless offense looked like. The Timberwolves had nobody on the team score more than 18 points. Jeff Teague led the way with 18 points off the bench. Keelan Martin had 17 off the bench. Robert Covington was the only starter to score in double figures. 14 points for Covington in 35 minutes. 7 rebounds, 4 steals, 3 assists. Was 5 of 13, 3 of 9 from beyond the arc. So Covington did exactly what you'd expect him to do on any night. 14-7, 4-3 with 33% three-point shooting on 9 attempts. That's about what you'd expect Roko to do on any given night. But he didn't go outside that in a game when the Wolves would have really needed it. Teague was shot 7 of 14 off the bench, had 18 points, 4 assists, was okay, played only 27 minutes. Shabazz Napier was 3 of 17 shooting in this game, 1 of 6 beyond the arc. He started, played 23 minutes, attempted 17 shots in 23 minutes, ended with 9 points, 3 assists, was somehow plus 1 on the game. He was one of only two Timberwolves to be a positive plus minus. The other was Gorgui Dieng, who only played 23 minutes to Noah Vonleh's 24. Gorgui had 5.7 rebounds, 4 steals, 2 assists, was 0 of 5 from beyond the arc after having shot really well from three-point range recently. And then Vonleh off the bench had 8 points, 9 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals. So Vonleh slightly outplayed Gorgui Dieng in this one. And interestingly enough, did also literally outplay him in terms of the minutes played column. Keelan Martin led the Wolves in minutes off the bench. He was second on the whole team next to Robert Covington, had 30 minutes off the bench, was 6 of 15 from the field, 3 of 7 beyond the arc, 17 points, 6 rebounds. Really good game for Martin. Him and Rocco down the stretch are really what kept the Wolves in the game. Minnesota fell behind by, it was 9 points with just a couple minutes, about 3 minutes to play. They battled back to get it within 4, actually briefly 3, after a couple 3-pointers from Martin and Rocco. And the Cavs really had some problems at the free throw line down the stretch. It was weird to see a team actually struggle more than the Wolves in terms of the charity stripe in important situations. As it turned out, though, the Wolves did a great job of forcing turnovers. The Cavs committed 28 turnovers in this game. The Wolves had 17 steals. I already mentioned that Covington and Gorgie each had 4 steals. Jarrett Culver had a couple. Noah Vonleh had a couple. In fact, everybody that played for the Timberwolves, except for Kata Bates-Diop, who only played 11 minutes, had at least 1 steal. So the Wolves did a great job forcing turnovers. It's really weird that they only were able to score 88 points, given how many extra possessions they got. The Cavs really overcame that by their free throw shooting, however. The Cavs attempted 36 free throws in this game. They only made 26, so a little over 72%. But the Wolves were 14 of 19. So the Cavs took 17 more free throws and made 12 more than the Wolves. The Wolves shot almost 74% from the line. But when you're out free throwed by 17, makes that hill much steeper to climb, even with all those turnovers that you forced. So the Wolves weren't terrible defensively. And to be clear, it's more because the Cavs are just also not a very good offensive team, especially with no Kevin Love. The Cavs only shot 41% from the field. They only had 4 guys in double figures. Nobody scored more than 18 for them either. This is the old, actually pretty similar to the Kings win on Thursday. Not the game tape here is not going to the Naismith Hall of Fame. Neither team was effective, was efficient offensively. The Cavs were 4 of 20 from beyond the arc. I mean, the Wolves lost to a team. Think about this. The Wolves lost to a team that committed 28 turnovers and made 4 3-pointers in the year, you know, I guess 2019 still, but in the 1920 NBA season. That's hard to do. And again, obvious caveat, the Wolves were without their 2 best offensive players, still without Jake Layman, obviously. So there's certainly a lot of plenty of excuses to go around for why this game didn't turn out very well, but certainly ugly. All right, next up, we're going to talk quickly about studs and duds, and then we're going to dive right into previewing Monday against the Brooklyn Nets. All right, studs from Saturday's game against the Cavs. It's hard to really pick studs in this game. We'll call Robert Covington a stud. You'd like him to score more than 14 points in 35 minutes with no Wiggins, no Towns. He easily had the most playing time on the team, but I think he did what he's supposed to do in this game, so that counts for something. Keelan Martin also, 17 points, 6 rebounds, 3 of 7 beyond the arc. Really good. Jeff Teague, I don't know that he belongs in the studs category, but 18 points, 4 assists is good in 27 minutes, so I guess we'll give it to him. We'll give him the nod. So there's your 3 studs. I guess it's the 3 players who scored in double figures. In terms of duds, this is a lot easier. We can take a look at Josh Okogie's 0 for 7 in 20 minutes, 1 point, 3 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal, 2 blocks. He's 0 of 2 from beyond the arc, 1 of 2 from the free throw line. We'll put him in the duds category. Also, Shabazz Napier in his 3 for 17 performance from the field, 9 points, 3 assists, 4 turnovers in 23 minutes, 1 steal. Did manage a plus 1 in the plus minus, but 3 of 17 is never a good thing. Those are probably the most obvious culprits. You could include Gorgui Dieng, 0 of 5 from 3-point range, but I think his 7 rebounds and 4 steals kind of gets him out of the duds category. So we'll go with only Okogie and Napier, with the number of guys that had okay games, but again, were just simply overextended due to the lack of offensive talent on the court for the Wolves. The scheme, we've talked about this pretty much, you know, at length here at Locked On Wolves. I'm sure you've read this elsewhere or heard this elsewhere, but the offense just doesn't work without a pass-first point guard, ideally, but especially without a cutter and dynamic offensive player in Wiggins and Towns, who this whole offense was built around as somebody who could draw the opposing big man outside the paint and allow the Wolves to play 5 out and also still have the ability for Towns to take the person guarding him to the rim, driving kick to shooters around the perimeter as a 7-footer, and then also the pick and roll game that's so much more dynamic with Towns. For as decent as Gorgui Dieng has been, and he's had a couple of really nice games, including the Sacramento win on Thursday, he isn't Karl-Anthony Towns, obviously, and other teams know that. They'd much rather give, you know, a career 33-34% shooter from deep like Gorgui Dieng that shot than a 42-43% shooter like Karl-Anthony Towns. And also just simply, I mean, Gorgui doesn't put the ball on the floor and drive to the rim. He's not dynamic in that way. He's not going to draw fouls. He doesn't score on post-up opportunities. Karl-Anthony Towns adds that other dynamic to the game. So not that we need to belabor why the Wolves are better with Towns on the court, but it's not simply that he's their best player. It's that the offense doesn't work without the players that it was designed to benefit the most, and that's Towns and Wiggins. And that fact has reared its ugly head here over the last six games with no Towns. There's no information on Towns' injury at this point. There was a report midweek, I forget who it was, but there was a local media member in the Twin Cities that said that Towns was getting closer to returning. I predicted that he wouldn't play Saturday. I mean, it'd be really nice to see him on the court Monday night against Brooklyn. We don't have any inclination about whether or not he's going to play. My guess is he'll still be listed as questionable, and then we'll see whether or not he's available. But it would be huge to get him back on the court. It's a winnable game. As we now transition into talking a little bit about the Nets. The Nets are 16-15 on the season. They sit at 7th in the East. They've been without Kyrie Irving since late November, and they've played okay without him, given that they don't have much other top-flight talent. You know, sitting number 7 in the East isn't what they had expected, but overall, if they're a little over 500 and you know, obviously no Kevin Durant all season, that's going to be okay for them. They can sell themselves as a decent destination for other complimentary players next year when Durant and Irving are both back. But they've overall been okay. Recently, they've lost 3 of 4. Lost to the Spurs and Knicks at home, beat the Hawks at home, lost at the Rockets. Obviously, at the Rockets isn't a bad loss. They're expected to beat the Hawks. Losing home to the Spurs and Knicks isn't great. The Spurs have been playing a little bit better lately. But still, the Nets have been carried primarily by DeAndre Jordan and Jared Allen, with Spencer Dinwiddie really stepping up in the backcourt in Kyrie Irving's absence. Dinwiddie's arguably, he really is a starting caliber point guard, and having him playing behind Kyrie Irving when Irving's healthy is a little bit of a waste of Dinwiddie's talent, in my opinion. He would be the league's certainly one of the best backup point guards, but has been playing really well in Irving's absence here recently and has been one of the main reasons why the Nets have been doing a little bit better than treading water in Irving's absence. Obviously, the Wolves and Nets played in the season opener way back in October, back on October 23rd in an overtime thriller. We're going to talk a little bit about that game here in a second, so we can, that'll help us preview what we can expect to see on Monday at Target Center between the Wolves and Nets. So a little bit more on that matchup here coming up next. You'll recall that the Wolves and Nets played back on October 23rd in the season opener. The Wolves won that game 127-126 in overtime. That was the game in which Kyrie Irving, in an isolation play, tried to cross over Josh Okogie and fell over, stood up, still got a decent look at the rim, and he missed, and the Wolves were able to hang on for a 1-point win in the season opener. Towns dominated that game. He had 36 points and 14 rebounds. He was 7-11 from beyond the arc, had 3 assists, 3 blocks, 3 steals, 3 turnovers in 39 minutes. That was a game that the Nets were relatively healthy for. DeAndre Jordan only played 16 minutes off the bench in that game, had 2 points, 3 rebounds. He's been playing a lot better of late. Jared Allen had played 36 minutes, had only 6 points, 9 rebounds, was not really a factor, only attempted 6 shots. So between Allen and Jordan, they were 3 of 7 from the floor with a total of 12 rebounds. Both players have been playing better lately, so I would expect to see more out of them, especially if Towns is not able to play in this game. Kyrie had 50 points in this game. Remember, it was an overtime game. He was 17-33 from the field, 7-14 from beyond the arc. 50 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists. He was a plus 18 in a game that they lost by 1. That was kind of the opener. So obviously the start of the Wolves' issues when it comes to containing high usage, high volume scoring guards. And Irving's just a good enough shooter from the perimeter that he really gave the Wolves fits. The Wolves allowing him to shoot 14 threes is a little bit weird. They've been better recently at forcing those into more mid-range jumpers, which is actually where Kyrie's a little bit more comfortable. Overall, Kyrie isn't a great three-point shooter on the season. He's a little bit, he's kind of hovering around league average. So expect to see Dinwiddie have a solid game against the Wolves in this one. He's obviously not the player that Kyrie is in terms of how dynamic he is offensively, but he's a more consistent distributor and he's just a solid player. He can still score from the mid-range if he wants to. And the Wolves will need to be cognizant of that heading into this game. The Wolves will also likely not have to face Caris LeVert, who's come back from his injury that he suffered last year, but did not play. I'm looking now. He is now listed as out for Monday's game against the Wolves. So they won't have to face Caris LeVert, who's played in just 9 games this year returning from injury. But they will still have to contend with Dinwiddie, obviously, who's been very, very good. So far this year, he's averaging 22.5 points per game. He's only a 30% three-point shooter, shooting 6 attempts a game. So, that's a positive thing for the Wolves. And the Nets overall as a team actually aren't that good of a three-point shooting team. They're ranked 28th in the league percentage-wise, despite being sixth in attempts per game. They're only shooting 33% from the field, from beyond the arc. The only players that see consistent run, David Nwaba is injured now. He's out for the year. He was shooting over 40% from deep. Now they really only have to deal with Joe Harris and Taurean Prince. Harris is a 43% three-point shooter. He was one of the league's best shooters last year and remains one of the better shooters. Prince is 37% from beyond the arc. Besides that, everybody else is going to be below league average that the Wolves face in this game. So if they can keep everybody but Harris and Prince from consistently launching three-pointers, they should be in a decent spot defensively against this team. In terms of the Nets defense, it's pretty good. And a lot of that has to do with Jared Allen and DeAndre Jordan anchoring the paint. Also, Kyrie being out, quite frankly, has helped. Kyrie being out has helped a lot because he's not, a great defender. Dinwiddie is a solid defender. So that's actually helped the Nets on that end of the floor, despite obviously missing Kyrie on the offensive end of the floor. The Nets also, Jordan and Allen really anchor their defense. They have a couple of decent perimeter defenders. Prince is pretty good. And I guess he's the one that kind of anchors that wing defense. Joe Harris is okay. But again, it all comes back to those guys in the paint. And the Wolves really struggling themselves from beyond the arc shooting. They aren't going to be able to do, if Jordan and Allen are clogging the paint, it's not like the Wolves are going to be able to punish the Nets from outside, especially with no Towns. I mentioned the Nets are shooting 33% from beyond the arc, ranking 28th in the league. The Wolves are shooting 31.8%. That's 29th in the league. The Nets average the 6th most 3 attempts per game. The Wolves average the 5th most 3 attempts per game. So, unfortunately for fans at the Target Center on Monday night, this is likely to be another clank fest like they saw against Cleveland on Saturday and like Wolves-Kings was last Thursday. Until the Wolves get Towns back, their offense just doesn't function at a high enough level to be pleasing to the eyes. And if they can't hit three-pointers, their offense is completely done for. And it's also really not aesthetically pleasing. So expect to see more of that. The Wolves are still fourth in the league in drawing fouls and getting to the free throw line, I should say, free throw attempts per game. But they're still only 20th in percentage at 76.5%. It's another area without Towns that really hurts. And in terms of drawing fouls, Wiggins had been doing a really good job lately of getting to the free throw line. And now the Wolves are essentially reliant on Jeff Teague and Josh Okogie are the only guys that get to the free throw line more than 3 times per game for this team right now, with Towns and Wiggins not available. I should say we don't know if Wiggins won't be playing in this game. With flu-like symptoms Saturday, one would think he would be questionable for the game on Monday. So there still seems to be a decent chance that we see him on the court. If Wiggins plays and Towns doesn't, the Wolves should still have a legit shot at winning this game. But it's not going to be easy. This will be a really close game regardless. If Towns is able to play and kind of neutralize Jared Allen in the paint, then I would really think that the Timberwolves should win this game and should be favored to win the game. But again, one more time mentioning this home schedule, the Wolves are 3-11 at Target Center this year, which is just shocking. So I guess nothing is a given when it comes to the Wolves generally, or even especially playing at Target Center. So after home against Brooklyn on Monday, the Wolves have a New Year's Day game at Milwaukee, 7 p.m. on Wednesday, New Year's Day. And then the Wolves are back home to face Golden State on a back-to-back Thursday. That game's on NBA TV. So another chance for the Wolves to win a home game against a bad team in Golden State. Of course, being on a back-to-back and traveling back isn't ideal. And then they'll be off Friday and Saturday before playing next Sunday at Cleveland. So again, three of the next four games, Brooklyn, Golden State, and Cleveland, are winnable, with the at Milwaukee game being the only almost for sure loss. And then next week gets a little bit tougher: at Memphis, home for Portland, at Houston, and then a quick homestand, Oklahoma City and Indiana. They actually have a home and home against Indiana here in about a week and a half. So the Wolves really need to, I mean, I keep saying this, I think I said that they needed to go 3-7-3 in their next 10 before the road trip, and they've won exactly one game. So this is kind of, again, a last gasp, and they need Towns to return. But if they can win against Brooklyn, Golden State, and Cleveland, win three out of the next four, then and get Towns back heading into a tough stretch of games. And there's no long road trips coming up anytime soon. It's basically two at home, one on the road, alternating here for the next couple of weeks. Then the Wolves can feel decent about themselves, and still only, they're only a couple games out of the playoff picture. So getting Towns back is imperative to that, to feeling better overall about themselves, as the schedule is only going to get a little bit tougher. They've already now faced a lot of the league's worst teams, and they need to really get it together against Brooklyn and Golden State this week. All right, that's all we have for you today here at Locked On Wolves. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll be back tomorrow with a look at the result for Monday night's game against the Brooklyn Nets.